Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
And good afternoon, Upstate. Welcome to Upstate Outdoors. You're listening to Philip Gentry and my lovely wife, Boat Girl, over here.
Hey, happy weekend, y'all.
That's right. It is Upstate Outdoors on 106.3 WRD, where we talk about everything that happens outdoors. And, man, I tell you what, it's, can we call it fall now?
Yes.
Yeah?
I've been cold.
Boat Girl is not happy about fall.
Not sort of, just because it's hunting season, but everything else, no.
No?
No. Being cold, wearing shoes, cleaning up the yard, bleh.
She don't, there's two things Boat Girl don't like. She don't like mornings, and she don't like cold.
Nope, and nope.
Nope, and nope. So, I love both of them, so there you go. We got a great show coming up for you today. We're going to start off with the Upstate Outdoors blog. We're going to talk about crappie fishing. And we actually did that. We talked to Russ Bailey. Was it last week?
Yeah, last week.
So, I mean, I love fall crappie fishing. It's just, you
know. He's preoccupied.
I just get preoccupied sometimes. So we're actually going to talk about, in the Upstate Outdoors blog, fall crappie fishing versus spring fishing. Is it the same thing? Is it different? Is it, you know, how's it different? So stay tuned for that. I hope to have some good information for you. Then our old buddy Mike Johnson is going to be on the show. We actually stopped by the Clinton house on the way in from the woods this morning. Had to restock.
Yep.
And feeding them corn. Feeding those deer some corn.
The deer are hungry.
I had to pick up some more. So I stopped by, saw Mike, and hey, man, I need to give you a call in a little bit, and then let's get you on the show. So we'll have Mike on the show with us.
He's a great guy.
Talk about all, man, he's been busy, too. It's you know, talking about a lot of stuff going on. You know, they do their skeet shoots and their benefits and their stuff.
And they got hunts now, too.
And now it's deer hunting and quail hunting, I think, is about to start.
When is that?
Yeah.
Soon?
I will have to ask him about that. And so then they're going to have a duck shoot and all that stuff. So
they are busy.
Yeah, we'll look forward to talking to Mike. And then we've got a story found on outdoorhub.com. And of course, this is in this was all over the news here locally about an angler who caught a northern snakehead fish in a private pond down in Gwinnett County, Georgia. Not too far, just down 85.
What in the world was a snakehead doing around here?
We'll read that
big
article.
Problem.
We'll read that article, and I will tell you everything you need to know, because I already know, even though I read the article, and I'll tell you even if the article doesn't.
Sweet.
How's
your
that?
Plethora of knowledge.
Yeah, well, I'm that way.
See, the smart one.
So then during the second hour, Boat Girl's going to bring us the Roadkill Cafe, and we're eating
lasagna.
We're eating lasagna.
We're in the fall food thing right now.
Yeah.
You know, casseroles, lasagna.
Is
I'm
it
come
just,
up with soup
is
next
it just,
week. Venison.
Oh, venison lasagna.
We ain't going to eat grocery store meat. Are you kidding me?
I know.
It's venison lasagna.
Just checking on you. Just checking. Speaking of which, got some information from the DNR that we're going to cover about watching out for deer during deer season. I watch for deer all the time during deer season.
I do too.
But talking about when you're traveling on the roadways. And also, it might be a little bit late on this, but got some information for you bear hunters or would-be bear hunters. It's a little bit late, but we'll cover that with you. And then got a really cool email last week from a gentleman who is a volunteer caretaker at the Cradle of Forestry in America. That's an interpretive nature center up in Pisgah, North Carolina, not too far from here, probably still within the listening areas. And
probably so. That's not far.
No, not far. I mean, we got a lot of listeners up in that part of North Carolina, and reached out and said his name's Robert Beanblossom, and he said, "Hey, we're doing a little traveling show going around the communities, talking about wildfire safety, and you know, could it be on the show
prevention?"
Yeah. And so we're going to talk with Robert and get some information from him about being so. You know, we did get a little bit of rain, have got a little rain, which is great. Food plots coming up, but it's still
not enough.
Still very dry. So, that is always a concern about wildfires here. So, look forward to talking to him. Then we will wrap up today's show with our calendar of events.
We got a couple.
And then our parting shot today. Hey, if you're one of these people who likes, you know, massages and stuff, you'll love this because there's a group. I don't know where they are. I don't remember where they are, but they're doing snake massages.
Which completely weirds me out.
Where you lay on the table or whatever, and they put different size snakes on you and let them crawl all over you.
It's disgusting.
Call that a massage.
Ew.
Last time I had a snake crawl on me, I didn't lay there too long.
No. That's why you're deaf in one ear, too, for shooting that thing.
Yeah. Something like that. So, but anyway, looking at what's – I mean, I know what you've been up to this week, but our listeners don't. So, we got out
Sunday.
I was out.
You were out
Saturday, and then we went back out Sunday and hunted in the rain.
We did.
And I skunked. I tell you what, I did not skunk. I've had a you skunked. I mean, you didn't skunk as far as not seeing anything.
Right. Yeah. I saw deer.
You didn't shoot anything.
No,
Sunday.
I didn't shoot anything. I wanted to, but yeah. I let him walk.
I had a good hunt Sunday, sat in the stand and, you know, went to the box stand because I knew it was going to rain and just kind of got one of those back to nature. And it was really nice to just sit and watch it rain and just chill out.
Just chill out.
And
I was in the box stand for the first time this season.
Yep.
On Sunday. And I had my snacks.
Nice to have that gun with
and
you,
And I had
it?
My gun. And yep. I had my I did some shopping.
Did you?
On the phone.
Uh-huh.
And I saw about eight deer. I think the ones at dark, I think they were two of the same ones. So I'm going to say
you know,
safely
you know
seven
why you
deer.
Couldn't see them good?
Because I had been shopping on
because you had that phone in your face. And
I was looking for patio
and
furniture.
Ruined your vision.
Well, I turned the phone off when it started getting dark.
I had to do that with one of my kids one time. Said, oh, it's dark. I'm getting down. I'm like, get that phone out of your face and you'll see that it's prime time
I
for
enjoyed
hunting.
The box as much as I had a good time bow hunting.
Yeah.
This season. Sort of.
Do you think?
Much.
Do you think it was? And I'll tell you, folks, quickly. We went through all of our box stands and we put up black plastic.
Yes.
Covered the insides with black plastic. It's a very gothic look inside of our box stands.
And they're only
facing in one direction. You know, the direction that we've got shooting lanes, and we got some food plots and or some baited sites down there. So if something sneaks up behind you, you just have to let it walk. You
they
know.
Had no idea I was up there.
But that does, that makes it completely
dark.
And you
in
sit
that
in the back
stand.
Corner of that stand, and they have no idea you're there.
No, not a clue.
Plus, it knocks down a lot of scent, too.
Probably a good thing in my case.
I'm liking it. I was really afraid that by putting all that plastic in there, if it stayed warm, that it was going to be like a sweat box.
Well, and, it wasn't warm.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I would early season. I don't know if it was hot enough. You'd probably get hot.
Well, if it stays cool like this, I mean, you know, it's not something you're going to bow hunt out of or really even muzzleloader hunt out of. So, well, anyway, let's go to our break. And then when we come back, we'll jump into the Upstate Outdoors blog.
Got a great show today. Y'all stay with us right here, 106.3 WORD.
Well, for the Upstate Outdoors blog this week, and I know we did a little bit of crappie fishing, talking about crappie fishing last week. We had Russ Bailey on the show, but I just wanted to do this, kind of had this idea when I was writing the blog and actually talked with a good friend of mine. He's a nationally recognized crappie fishing guide over in Alabama. And
okay.
His name is Brad Whitehead. You've met Brad.
I have met Brad.
We fished with him. Was
couple
that about
years ago?
2 years ago? I don't remember.
On, I'm trying to think. What? Gunnersville. We're on Gunnersville with Brad Whitehead.
Yeah. Yeah, it was
hit
on Gunnersville. Sorry. Yeah, sorry about that.
He's trying to learn how to work the buttons.
Yeah, it's stuck. The button stuck. I don't know why it's so sticky.
Anyway.
Anyway, so let's. And I was talking with Brad about you know, everybody loves to fish for crappie during the spring, and in fall comes around and it's kind of similar. A lot of folks say, oh, it's the same thing except for they're not spawning. So I asked Brad about that. He loves to fish for crappie, and this kind of was his response. Brad Whitehead loves fish for crappie 12 months out of the year. He enjoys the changes in season and the changes of figuring out patterns as crappie behavior changes during those seasons. With fall in the air, many crappie anglers draw similarities between springtime crappie fishing and fall fishing, claiming them to be nearly identical, except for the spawning part, of course. Now, Whitehead said it's time to tear down some of those misconceptions. He said in the spring, crappie are moving from cold water to warm water. In the fall, they're moving from warm water to cooler water. So, yeah, they're on the move in both seasons, but that's about all the similarities I can draw between these two seasons. Now, at the end of the day, crappie do have patterns that they follow year-round. They key in on bait fish movements. They love to hang out around structure. They prefer to hold in areas with suitable water quality, and they typically group together in schools of varying densities. Whitehead said, with some basic understanding of those patterns, it's not hard to catch crappie year-round. And when asked why so many anglers prefer to fish for crappie during the spring, he drew a comparison with deer hunting.
Okay.
He said everybody wants to hunt deer right before the rut, just like everybody wants to fish for crappie right before they spawn. They believe it's easier, but I think it's not only because they think it's easier, but it's because that's just what they've always done, and that's what dad's always done, and that's what granddad's always done.
I agree. Springtime. When the daffodils come out, time to go crappie fishing.
Well, actually, that's me throwing the daffodils.
Well,
out there,
I've heard that from other people, and I know people that don't fish but about 4 weeks out of the year.
It was always the dogwood. When the dogwoods bloom, from mid-March to mid-April, I'm going to go crappie fishing. Now, Whitehead said, whereas crappie move to shallow structure in the spring to spawn, they move to mid-depth structure in the fall to eat and find comfortable water. Now, part of that equation, at least on river and flood control lakes, like we have around here, is falling water. He said crappie don't go too shallow because the impoundments start drawing water down for the winter.
And Makes sense.
He also said that drawdown affects the bait fish that they feed on. He said, I would suggest locating some brush tops or cane beds in about 18 to 24 feet of water. He said, if that's in the back of a creek or even if it's near the main lake, that's fine. But those fish will pull out there and hold in the top of that structure and just hammer bait fish as they pass by because they're hungry.
Yeah.
Now, his preferred tactic for catching crappie during the fall is jigging with a single 7.5-foot jig pole. He uses a 1/16 ounce jig on 6-pound test monofilament line. That's pretty typical.
Yep.
And he fishes for fish that are typically suspended near the top of the structure. Now, he also confided that crappie frequently stray from the tops of the structure, but they suspend at about the same depth. I said a lot of anglers will motor up to a brush pile or a cane bed and then plop the jig right down on top of the structure. He said, that's a mistake. I shut down my motor well away from the spot I'm going to fish, and I have my jig in the water at least 20 yards from where the structure is, because he's got it marked on his GPS.
Sure.
He said, a lot of times I'll have caught 4 or 5 crappie before I've even gotten close enough to the structure, you know, to throw a marker on it or, you know, to feel it with the rod tip.
Right. I understand that.
Yep. So, that's
I've seen a lot of crappie being caught right now. You know, I keep up with what everybody's doing on Facebook, fishing and all that. I've seen a lot of really good crappie being caught right now. And the lake traffic is obviously calmed down because the pleasure boat traffic's calmed down and a lot of people are in the woods.
Yeah.
You know, so there's a good bit of fishing pressure this time of year that is off of the lakes.
Yeah. Yeah, I saw a guy, I was like, and it was one of the, I don't even know where it was. I think it was on Lake Wiley, and he was a catfisherman. And he was filming the boat ramp, and
there was like nobody in it.
No, there was nobody there. He says, "Man, it's eerie." He said, "You know, this time last month, you know, even during the middle of the week, there would have been you know 24 boats here, and you know, a couple of months back, you wouldn't even been able to get a spot."
Wow. one of my coworkers was out on Monday and just laid the hammer down on the largemouth, and he said there was nobody out there.
Yeah. And it's like, you know, if you go, you know, there are still some weekend fishermen, but if you go during the week,
there's nobody out there.
And a lot of folks are in the woods, you know, chasing them white-tailed deer. And that's fine. They didn't have it. So I tell you, the thing for me is, you know, talking about year-round, and I know it's not as comfortable, but, man, as soon as I used to only deer hunt until Thanksgiving.
Right.
I would deer hunt up until Thanksgiving, and then I would jump in on the lake and start striper fishing. That's back in my striper fishing days.
It's cold.
Oh, man, that's when you want a striper fish.
I'm good starting about mid-February, but that January fishing is
February is colder than January.
I don't know. Maybe it's in my head, and I can see little glimpses of spring pop up mid to late February. But that January, that wind's
And
blowing.
I'm going to tell you, early March is some of the coldest time we get.
I think it's in my head. Yeah. I think there's glimpses of spring popping out, and I'm ready and raring to go. But January.
I like early January.
Yeah,
so
I know.
We get out there, and
I'm going to bundle up in a big old monkey suit and just grin and bear.
Just sit on the dock. All you got to do now is sit on the dock.
Yeah, sit on the dock. I'm going to get me a buddy heater on the dock.
Buddy heater on the dock. Get you could take one of those pop-up blinds from the deer camp and put that
thing
up.
And put a buddy heater in it and put some rods out.
And put some rods out and say, look, PG, I'm fishing.
It's January, I'm fishing. I'm just going to put rods out and go up to the...
Hey, what about... well, that's the bad thing about not having a T-top on the bikini hauler. Is we can't put one of them curtains around it to hold some heat in or keep the weather out. Should have thought about that.
I don't know, though. It gets in the way if you're a caster.
Should have thought about... Caster?
Caster.
Who's casting?
You're too tall to fit under a T-top anyway, PG.
I know.
Head on it.
Well, hey, we're going to go to our break now because we got our interview with our buddy Mike Johnson coming up. Don't want to keep him holding any longer. We're going to get right to that.
Right here, 106.3 WORD.
All right, well, our next guest is no stranger to Upstate Outdoors. He's actually one of our sponsors. We got Mike Johnson from the Clinton House Plantation on the line with us. Mike, welcome back to Upstate Outdoors.
Welcome, Mike.
Hey there. How y'all doing?
Oh, we're doing good, man. I tell you, we've been talking about all the stuff that's going down at the Clinton House with all the shoots and all the deer hunts and skeet shooting and fundraising, and you're right in the middle of all that stuff running the whole parade.
I try to. Sometimes it just runs me. But I try to stay ahead of it. Try to stay ahead of the race, that's for sure.
Yeah. So y'all had a pretty busy week this past week with some big shoots going on down at Clinton House.
Yeah. We had Clay's for Cure in. It was a shoot for the American Diabetes Association. That thing is a pretty big shoot. And several other charities, you can go to our website and check them out and see how you can get involved. But it's a lot of fun for good causes.
Yeah, we came down and did one. Gosh, I don't remember back during. I guess it was the spring. Time kind of gets away from me, but it's always a fun time, and you got a great banquet facility there. So there's a lot to take advantage of down at the Clinton House.
It is, and we usually have a pretty good shrimp boil sometimes at them things. So it's always a bonus.
It is shrimp season.
Yeah, it is shrimp season.
Yeah.
So,
right.
Well, we also been talking about how you're getting into the supplying hunters with all of their needs, and you got some ammo, some good ammo prices and bulk pricing. How did that come about?
Well, I just started seeing a need for, at least in my little county, where it was beginning to become difficult to be able to buy the simple stuff you needed, shotgun shells, 9mm, 40-45s, and we're not stocking like a big box store, but your basic stuff, your 20 gauge, 12 gauge, 9mm, 40-45, some of your hunting, your most popular hunting rounds. We're keeping some of it in stock. That way people don't have to drive so far to pick it up, and we're definitely trying to keep competitive prices with it as well. We want people to know that the Clinton House is a facility for everybody. You don't have to be a member. You can be a member. We want people to use it like it's theirs and take opportunities to be able to use us for what we are, and not feel like they have to go all the way to Greenville or Columbia. They can shop local.
Yeah.
And that's a big thing now, shop local.
Oh, yeah. And that's I imagine there's several times somebody shows up, you know, they're with the busy schedules folks have, and they show up down there and go, oh, man, I only brought one box of shells or something like that. So it's nice not to have to get back in the truck and, like you said, drive
up the interstate,
the 20 miles, you know, to get somewhere to try to find some.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, you might get down there and think you're only going to shoot 100 rounds. You might decide to shoot 200.
There you go.
And we want to make that available to you with ease and not financially hurt you either.
So are you stocking steel shot too?
Well, we bought a couple cases of it. I mean, we are in the upstate of South Carolina. So, you know, I don't know how much duck hunting we're going to actually have, but I do have some steel shot. Most of it we're going to be carrying is Black Cloud.
Yeah, I saw that when I came over the other day, and there's a big wad of ducks there in the pond, and they were like, hey, they're hanging out. Like, hey, this is cool. And I was like, yeah, I know what's happening soon.
So. Yeah, absolutely. Every time I feed them little jokers, they laugh at me. I keep reminding them I will get the last laugh.
Yeah, yeah. So, hey, we're friends now. And speaking of feeding, you're also, and I tell you, this is a big help to the community around there, you're selling bulk corn. So folks who are hunting deer over corn, they can buy it there in 50-pound bags or even in larger quantities.
Yes, absolutely. So our bags, you've seen them today, they're supposed to be 50 pounds. They're more like 60 pounds. We are keeping some corn on the porch to sell so people can come by. They don't have to go and once again, drive all over the upstate to find a bag. They can swing by us and pick it up. We keep it bagged. You've seen how fast it took me to bag up you, 8 bags of corn a day. So we keep it right there on the porch, and y'all come by and get it as you need it. I hope to be able, my plans are in the future, is put up a few more grain bins and start running a peanut corn blend. But that's something in the near future, but I'm working on that now, is putting together a feed mixture that is top notch and will bring a little surprise to the woods.
Well, I guess buying it local, like buying it from you, you don't have to worry about that corn being 3 years old sitting in a big box store warehouse either.
Oh, you know? Absolutely not.
That's one of the things that we're concerned about. Yeah.
My grain bin ain't but 12 tons. So I promise you, I'm moving through corn pretty quick. So
that's awesome.
It's not old corn at all. Not at all. Plus, some doggone ducks eat most of it.
Got to get them fattened up, right? Will they? You think they'll fly come duck season, or you reckon it'll be one of them chase them around on the water kind of thing?
No, we got these jokers conditioned. They flying.
Yeah,
my dog stays wore out, but they gonna fly. They gonna fly good.
Well, speaking of dogs, when I was by there earlier today, Tilly wouldn't sit with me. I was wanting to get a picture because Boat Girl's got her eye on a Boykin.
I got Boykin fever, Mike.
And I was like, I'm gonna get a picture.
My goodness.
She wouldn't even sit with me. She's like, look, I'm tired. I'm sitting over here on the couch by myself, and I'd sit down beside her, and she'd get up and go sit in a chair. What's up with that?
She's a little sore. She's a little wore out. She sat on the couch all summer long and ate dog food and relaxed and got fat and old.
She just wants to be relaxed.
Yeah.
Now here it is. We got the first couple cold days of the season, and we go out and work a little bit, and She's mad at everybody. She's a typical woman.
Yeah.
You go out and get her, make her work a little bit, and she's going to be mad at the world for a week or two.
Well, she's just been spoiled over the summer. That's all.
That's right.
So speaking of that, how much longer we got before quail season starts?
What are you talking about? We already doing it, bud.
Are you okay? I always get confused about when you can start with release birds versus when
we need to get down there.
When the natural season, honey, I'm deer hunting right now.
I know.
Okay, we'll get down there like when it's cold. That's when I like to go.
Mike Johnson, y'all have the most delicious birds ever. I mean, they are wonderful.
PG, you heard the lady. Yeah. You can take a day and bring her quail hunting. Them deer will still be there.
Yeah, we'll I don't know.
I'm gonna try to talk to
it's almost rut time, you know. You gotta do them quail will be there, them deer rutting.
I know, but we're out of quail. We don't have any in the freezer.
We might out of deer too.
You hear him, don't you, Mike?
I tell you, I can't shop but for one thing at a time. Well, hey, Mike, if folks want to come down there and get involved in any of the great stuff that you got going on, whether it's, target shooting or skeet shooting or shoot something bigger than that, they want to put together an event with you. What's the best way for them to do that?
Man, they can call the office, 864-833-0274. Or they can do a simple email, mike@theclintonhouse.net, or they can go to our website, and there's a little form they can fill out and submit it. And keep looking at our website, and be quite honest with you, shoot us an email and get on our newsletter. I promise you that I don't send out a bunch of newsletters because I hate to sit down and type something out. My wife said I don't use proper grammar anyway. I hate to sit down and so if I send a newsletter out, it's usually important.
There you go.
Or worth reading. It is definitely not saying, hey, how you doing?
Yeah.
Send us an email so we can get your email and get you on that newsletter. We send out what's coming up, what shoots are coming up, what charities are going to be down there, the contacts for them, just that kind of stuff. What kind of specials we have running on quail hunting and deer hunting and all that. But if all else fails, just pick up the telephone and call us.
There you go. Mike Johnson, Clinton House Plantation. Mike, thanks for being on the show with us. And also, we really thank you for your sponsorship of Upstate Outdoors. It's a great partnership. And I look forward to seeing you again real soon.
Actually, it's probably going to be sooner than later because Miss Boat Girl doesn't say she wants more quail.
That's right. I'm ready.
I'll fight that battle one at a time. So if I get me a deer in the cooler now, then I might be like ready to go shoot me a quail.
Just remember one old saying, happy wife, happy life.
There you go. All right, Mike. Take care, bud.
All right, buddy.
All right. See?
He's going to take my side on it.
Yeah, I know. Well, so we were talking about that day. It's like, you know, we need to go down there when it gets cold. We did that Christmas time last year.
Yes.
But what I have to tell him is, when is she going to be able to, you know, get loose? And it's not me. It's her. Anyway.
I got to say, and if y'all have not been to the Clinton House,
yep,
ladies included, that is one of the most beautiful places ever.
Yep.
For sure. It's worth a visit.
Well, let's go to our break. When we come back, got a cool story, I guess, about a snakehead fish that was found pretty close to here in Gwinnett County, Georgia. So we'll give you all the details from that right after the break.
Y'all stay with us right here, 106.3 WORD.
Boat Girl, I got a question for you.
Okay.
Do you know what a bowfin is?
I do.
Right? Mudfish.
Mudfish.
Grindle.
I've never heard it called a grindle.
Yeah.
Mudfish.
Bowfin is the name of it. Have you caught one? I mean, the bowfins are not, I don't know that I've ever caught one anywhere except for maybe Santee and areas below.
I don't think I've ever personally caught one.
A lot of those little ponds and an oxbow off of a river, mm-hmm, down in a coastal river.
Swampy stuff.
Swampy stuff. I say that to talk about this article that I found on outdoorhub.com, and it was written, it's just one of their reports. I think they took it from somebody else. But anyway, it's a story about a northern snakehead fish that was found in Gwinnett County, Georgia. And the reason I say this, a lot of people, the snakeheads, which are, they're actually Asian fish. They're imported.
Really?
Yes. And they look very similar to a bowfin, except for, and a bowfin's a mean fish now. Got a lot of teeth, prehistoric looking
fish. They fight good.
They tear up tackle. I've never caught a snakehead.
Mudfish.
No, snakehead. I've never caught a snakehead. They look similar. I don't know how they fight. So the article says an angler in Gwinnett County, Georgia, caught a northern snakehead in a pond located on private property, prompting Georgia DNR officials to release the following memorandum. Tuesday, October the 8th, 2019. In early October, an angler reported catching a northern snakehead, an aquatic invasive species, in a pond located on private property in Gwinnett County. And that's according to Georgia Department of Natural Resources. This is the first time this fish species has ever been confirmed in Georgia waters. And this is our first line of defense in the fight against aquatic invasive species such as the northern snakehead or our anglers, said Matt Thomas. He's the chief of fisheries for Wildlife Resources Division in Georgia. He said, thanks to the quick report by an angler, our staff was able to investigate and confirm the presence of this species in this water body.
That's pretty cool that the person that caught it knew that something wasn't right.
Knew what it was and knew.
And like, hey, what is this? And this looks like a snakehead, and I got to call somebody.
And that kind of goes back to what I was talking about, because Gwinnett would not be bowfin territory.
No.
So if you caught a bowfin, you know, out of Lake Robinson, it probably ain't a bowfin. It's probably a northern snakehead. But we're now taking steps to determine if they have spread from this water body and hopefully keep it from spreading to other Georgia waters. Well, here's a problem with snakehead. Snakeheads can move on land. They can,
which is freaky.
They can breathe and they will walk from one pond to another, slither, crawl, whatever. They actually walk on their fins. Like a walking catfish, if you ever seen that on TV.
I have seen it on TV.
Very, very similar to that. And that kind of developed, you know, like I said, they're Asian, and they live in these drought, flood-type areas where, you know, when it floods, they live there, and then when there's drought, they walk to another pond.
Which is so freaky to me. I don't know what their range is. When this story came out on the internet this past week, some people said, oh, they can only go, you know, 25, 30 yards. Some people said they could go further than that. Some people said less, but it's still freaky.
Well, I mean, they can walk from a pond across the dam, get into a creek, you know.
Right.
They're very mobile. So now, snakeheads have been reported in 14 states in the United States. However, this is the first time, like I said, it was reported in Georgia. Snakehead's a long, thin fish, similar in appearance to a bowfin. They can get up to 3 feet in length. They have a long dorsal fin that runs along their whole back and have a dark brown blotchy appearance, and they can breathe air and can survive in low oxygenated systems. Invasive species are often introduced through unauthorized release. Now, I almost guarantee you that's where this one came from. They're actually a delicacy in Asian food markets.
Really?
Yes. And I don't know that they still do it, but you used to, like up in New York, mm-hmm. you could buy a snakehead.
Live?
Yeah, to eat.
Okay.
And they're also, and I don't want to kind of go down this path, but they have like a lot of tradition or something behind them where, you know, if you eat the male snakehead, I don't know, it's like, you know, like an aphrodisiac or something like that, or, you know, just...
I'm going to research that.
But, and what happens a lot of times is folks who, you know, are interested in those fish for that reason or to eat, get them and then, you know, don't want them or don't. And like I said, they breathe on land. So you put them in a wet paper bag and they're good, you know, to go. And then they're like, eh, didn't have time to eat this one.
I'm just having this mental picture about, like, throwing one of those. Going to the market somewhere, you know, in a big city where that's common to buy them.
Well, I mean,
and throwing it in the back seat of the truck and then making it home and he's still alive. I mean,
look at it like this. You can buy eels in a market. You can buy live. Just like you go into the Winn-Dixie and buy live lobster. That's our culture.
Yeah.
Is to buy live lobster from Maine, which are not native here. If you throw a lobster in a pond, it's going to die.
Yeah, you might as well throw it in a pot and eat it. Yeah. But, you know.
But it kind of the same thing if somebody were to say, hey, look, we bought these live lobsters, right? Because you take a lobster home and it's live, and they're like, eh, I don't want it, or, you know, whatever. Just what
we
are we going to do?
We
what are we
going to
do with this lobster? We're going to throw it live and let it sit there and, you know, eat the. No, just throw it back here in the creek, you know, kind of thing.
Okay.
So. And, of course, then what happens is, you know, two of them come together, and then there's several.
A lot.
Yeah. So how can anglers help? They can learn to identify a northern snakehead. And another thing is, if you got an aquarium where, you know, maybe you got a snakehead that you got illegally or something like that, or other fish, dispose of your aquarium animals and plants in the garbage, not in the water. I remember a guy called an Oscar one time. You know what an Oscar is?
Yeah, that's a
in Lake
goldfish looking thing.
In Lake Hartwell. And that joker was about 3.5 pounds.
What?
And they thought Oscar looks a lot like a piranha. And they thought there was a big story came out. They thought it was a piranha was caught
somebody
in Lake Hartwell.
Somebody had let their Oscar go in the
and
lake.
And they had just dumped it in the lake.
That is so funny.
Dispose of all your bait in trash cans at disposal stations or above the waterline on dry land, and including live bait.
A lot of states have laws on that.
Also, if you find one, you want to kill it. And, you know, notify authorities. So.
Yeah. Bad thing.
Yeah. And if possible.
Don't throw it on the bank. It'll crawl back in.
No. Take pictures of the fish. Note where you caught it. Stuff like that. So.
Put that joker in a Bilo bag. Yeah.
So there's music. We got to go to our break. We'll be right back after the break with the Roadkill Cafe. So stay tuned.
Right here. 106.3 WORD.